for those of you who either were with us in Lincolnwood last week or were not, we discuss more of the hashkafa behind Tzniut. And it is online, by the way. Thank you to Mrs. Tracy Schultz. Thank you. I was going to say Schulman. I was like, that's not right. Schultz. For posting it really quickly. She's been really great about that this year. And we discussed it last week, how the purpose of Tzniut, I would say the ultimate purpose, is really to cover up that which is distracting so that we can help people focus on who we really are, on who our... what we believe our essence to be. And we spoke about that for a while. You know, the fact that we want to emphasize that which lies within, so we try to de-emphasize that which lies without. One of the reasons why I liked the cartoon here is because both of the extremes seem to assume this male-dominated culture. But for us, Tzniut really is more about women's empowerment than about a male-dominated culture. It's not just because of what they see, or it's not just because of what they think, even though that has to do with it, and we'll see elements of that. It's really about empowering us to show the world who we really are, as opposed to distracting them by what we really are not, but what we happen to have as a part of us also, which is also super important. But like we discussed last week, it's about not distracting other people with the minutiae, with the things that are less relevant, and helping people focus on that which is more internal, that which is more important. For more information, you know, go to the shir from last week. The question that I want to deal with tonight is, what does the halacha require us to cover up in order to help facilitate this focus on who we are, right? If our goal is to help others not be distracted by our physical bodies and to help them focus on who we really are, what exactly is it that we have to cover up? You know, do we have to go to the extreme of covering up our entire bodies other than our eyes? Do we, you know, what do we have to cover? What do we not have to cover, etc.? And as I'm sure many of you know, because no one here is wearing anything that covers their entire bodies, right? We do not have to cover every single aspect of our physical body in order to prevent all the distraction, etc. We only have to cover up that which is considered distracting. And that part of our bodies is generally known as erva. Just to give you a sense of the halakhic requirement to cover up our erva, let's turn to source number one on page two. And the first time we see the requirement for us to cover up our erva in a halachic way is in Vayikra, Perek Yichet, Pasuk Vav. It's actually following the very famous Pasuk of Bechukoteim Lo Telechu, you know, don't follow in the ways of the other nations. There's a list of the arayot, right, all the illicit relationships, which is it's purposefully related to the word erva. And we're told, Ish ish el kol she'er besaro lo tikruvu legalot erva ani Hashem. Right, that no man should come close to any of the women who would be illicit to him in a way to reveal her erva. So this is the first indication we have that we're not allowed to reveal our erva. The second indication is in Sefer Devarim, in source number 2, in Perek Chaf Gimel Pasuk Tet Vav, where we're told, Ki Hashem Elokecha, it's a little bit of a different context, where it's actually in the context of war. Ki Hashem Elokecha Metalech Bekerev Machanecha. That Hashem is in our camp, is in our military camps. Lahatzilcha, because He wants to save us, He wants to help us during our wars. Vilatzeit oivecha lefanecha, He wants to give us our enemies. V'haya machanecha kadosh, and because Hashem's presence is there, our camps have to be holy. And how do we demonstrate this holiness in our machanot? V'lo yir'e becha ervat davar. We shouldn't have any erva seen within the camps. We shouldn't be revealing any erva. But what exactly does erva mean? You know, there are many ways of defining it. We're going to look at the Ibn Ezra because I just think that he defines it in a very clear way. I shouldn't say there are many ways of defining it. Many people define it in this way. I think that Ibn Ezra just clarifies it in a very specific way. And he says in source number 4, on Vayikra Perek Yichet Pasuk Vav, the first source, he explains it as, Erva davar meguneh. Erva is something, is davar meguneh nechshaf. It's something that when exposed is indecent, tzarich lehikasot, and therefore should be covered. And he further clarifies, which is really before this, in source number 5 in Sefer Bereishit, and he says, Hayod ha'erva nisteret. The erva is something that should be hidden. And so erva is generally translated as nakedness, but what the Ibn Ezra is explaining is that erva is something that is indecent when exposed. It's something that is expected, usually is hidden. something that is usually covered, when uncovered, it's considered to be erva. And so now that we understand what erva is, who is required to cover up their erva? Is it just women? No. Men and women are both expected to cover up their erva. In fact, the clearest example of this is in source number 6. In Sefer Shemot, Perachav, Pasachav Gimel, the Torah is discussing different aspects of the Mishkan. And we're told about the Mizbeach, V'lo ta'ale b'ma'alot al Mizbechi. The Kohanim cannot walk up, they cannot create steps to walk up to the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach is high. They needed to get there somehow. There are no elevators, right? They needed to get there somehow. And the Torah tells us that they were not allowed to construct a staircase in order to get up there. Why not? Asher lo tegale ervatzcha alav. So that your, meaning the Kohen's, erva, the Kohen's nakedness, the Kohen's, whatever should usually be covered, will not become exposed. And not only do we have this halakha that we're not allowed to build stairs going up to the Mizbeach to prevent erva from being shown, but in addition to that, we have a requirement that the Kohanim dress in a certain way. If you go to source number 7, a few prakim later in Shmot Perachav Chet, we're told that the children of Aaron, the Kohanim, have to wear a ketonet. That is part of the big day kahuna. And they have to wear it with belts. Let's skip to Pasuk Membet. Even though they're wearing a ketonet, a kind of robe, if you will, they still have to wear pants underneath. They're too see-through. Okay. Rebecca, you can sit down. Okay. I feel bad. Not only do the Kohanim have to wear these ketonot, they have to wear these robes, but underneath them, they had to wear pants made of linen. Why? Again, lechasot besar erva, to cover the flesh of that which is supposed to be covered. Mimatnayim ve'ad yirechayim yihiyu. That which should be covered is from the groin until the thigh, through the thigh. And so we're told that two different halachot stem from this idea that men also can't expose their erva. They can't walk upstairs to get to the Mizbeach. We know that. What did they create instead to get to the Mizbeach? A ramp. And they also have to wear pants underneath their robes. We're not going to do the rest of them inside, but sources numbers 8 through 10 are further sources that discuss the inyan, like the idea of tzniut for men. There's one that talks about how a certain Rav, his mother made him this kind of see-through cloak, and his friends or his talmidim, I forgot who, his talmidim wouldn't let him wear it because it was see-through and it wasn't appropriate. And we have other indications that Bnei Torah should not dress in an ugly way, they shouldn't dress in a dirty way, they shouldn't dress in a way that it's undignified. So there really are halachot, it's a little bit different, but there really are important discussions of tzniut for men as well in the sources. And last year I spoke about how I originally created this for a class that I'm teaching in the academy for 16-year-olds, and it was very important, and it was one of the first questions they asked me. Is tzniut only for women? Right? Do men have it also? Like, why is it only for us? And so I found it very important to show them, and I think for us as well, to realize that tzniut is not just for women. Yes, there are more requirements, and there are different requirements for women. I'm not going to deny that. But I think that it's important to realize that it's not only for women, that it's something we expect men to adhere to as well. Of course, there are different standards. Men and women are different, and we have different bodies, and so we're going to have different requirements of what to cover up. But there is an expectation in the sources in halacha that they adhere to certain elements of tzniut for them as well. The question is, for women, what is considered erva? Right? What is considered this erva that has to be covered up? We know that we have to cover the erva because when uncovered, it's considered to be indecent. But what is considered erva? The Gemara tells us in source number 11, in Gemara, there's a Gemara in Brachot that tells us very clearly that and delineates four different things that are considered erva for a woman. I underlined all of them, so first I just want to go through all four because we're not going to have time to focus on all of them in tonight's shir. The first one, Amar Ravi Yitzchak, Tefach Be'isha Erva. A tefach, a hand's breadth, is considered erva. What does that mean? Okay, so a hand's breadth is considered to be the width of a typical hand. Generally, most poskim hold that means about 8 centimeters wide, but practically it's not just going across, it's the whole palm. Like a tefach is a hand's breadth, so it's kind of like the idea of a palm. And so it's considered to be 8 centimeters across, and it's basically 8 centimeters squared, if that gives you any sense of anything, because it really is considered to be a not a line, but a square kind of area. Okay, so that's number one. We'll actually spend a lot of time, not a lot of time, but we'll spend some time tonight discussing what exactly that means, tefach be'isha erva. But it says that a hand's breadth on a woman that's exposed is considered erva. What that means, we'll get to in a moment. The three other things that are considered erva on a woman are at the very end of the second line, Amar Rav Chista, shok be'isha erva. We're told that a shok is considered erva. What is a shok? This is the subject of a machloket, one of the things that I won't be able to speak about tonight, but I'm happy to give another share if you guys are interested. There's basically a machloka as to whether that refers to the thigh or the entire leg, like the calf. Not the entire leg. It's either the thigh or the calf. And how we differentiate between that halachically and what that means for us practically. Lots of issues raised there. The last two are less regarding clothing, but still have to do with us as women and tzniut in different ways. Amar Shmuel, the next page, so on page 3, on the first line at the end, Amar Shmuel, kol be'isha erva, a woman's voice is considered erva, this is the source for kol isha. And finally, that which we discussed several years ago in covering the sources on covering hair, last line, Amar Rav Sheshet, sayar be'isha erva, Rav Sheshet says that hair on a woman is erva as well. Like I said, we're going to be focusing on the first one, so just flip back for a moment to page 2. What on earth does tefach be'isha erva mean? A tefach of what? We know it's a measurement, but a measurement of what? What is going on here? Before we even get to answering that, the Gemara has an interesting discussion, because just starting from the beginning again, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak tefach be'isha erva l'mai. What is this referring to? A tefach be'isha, tefach is erva on a woman in what case? In what scenario? If you're going to say that it's talking about gazing at her, that a man can't gaze at more than a tefach of a woman, the Amar Rav Sheshet, didn't Rav Sheshet already tell us kol mistakel be'etzba ketana shel isha ki ilu mistakel b'makom haTorah? Even if a man gazes, meaning with sensual intent, okay, this isn't looking, this is gazing for the purposes of arousal, even if a man gazes at a woman's pinky finger, it's as if he's gazing at the vaginal area, meaning it's really bad. It's not just and obviously a pinky is smaller than a tefach, right? So the Gemara is saying we can't be talking about gazing because nothing's okay when it comes to gazing, right? Even less than a tefach is considered erva when it comes to gazing. He's not allowed to gaze at anything. So what are we talking about that when a tefach is exposed, it's considered erva? So the Gemara answers, Ella, in the middle of that second line over there, Ella be'ishto ulekriyat shema. No, it must be referring to a specific situation where anything more than a tefach being exposed is a problem. And this is talking about a man who is saying Dvarim Shebek Dusha, for instance, Shema, right? Anything that has to do with davening, tefillah, anything that's kadosh. The example that they give is Kriyat Shema, even for his wife. He can't say Kriyat Shema in front of his wife who has more than a tefach exposed. Okay. So now we understand that a man is not allowed to gaze at any part of the woman's body, but when it comes to what he can say Shema in front of, even his wife, when obviously he's allowed to, assuming she's not a Nida, he's allowed to see all of her body, but when he's experiencing, when he's, involved in Dvarim Shebek Dusha, when he's davening or saying Kriyat Shema, he's not allowed to say it in front of more than a tefach of something of her body exposed. But obviously the question becomes, a tefach of what? What are we talking about here? What is that? We know the measurement, but what is the item that is being exposed here that's a problem? And so here the Shulchan Aruch lends us a hand. If you turn to source number 12, the Shulchan Aruch explains very clearly, tefach megula v'isha b'makom shadarka l'chasoto. It's talking about a tefach of a revealed place on a woman, specifically in the area of her body that she generally covers. So we're not talking about, my hand is a tefach, obviously, that's the basis of the measurement. What if my hand's exposed? Can my husband not say Kriyat Shema in front of me? And so the Shulchan Aruch explains, no, that's not considered to be darcha l'chasoto. Most women walk around with their hands exposed, excluding Chicago winters. We're talking about, Spain here, so I'm sure it's a little wet. Warmer, and he says, "V'makom shadarcha lechasoto." So it's a problem to reveal a tefach or more of the areas of her body which she usually covers. Afilu he ishto asar likro kriyat shema kenegda. Even if it's his wife, he's not allowed to recite kriyat shema in front of her. Then the Rama adds something that seems to make it a little bit stricter, but don't worry, he retracts. Haga, which is the sign that this is the Rama speaking, v'yesh omrim dafka be'ishto. There are those who say that this tefach thing, that she can reveal up to a tefach, and he can still say Kriyat Shema, it's only beyond a tefach reveal that he can't say Kriyat Shema. That's dafka be'ishto, that's only with his wife. Aval be'isha acheret, afilu pachot mitafach ha've'erva. But with other women to whom he's not married, he can't even recite Kriyat Shema if, like, a pinky finger is showing. Right? I mean, that's not obviously what we're talking about. But even if a pinky finger's width worth of a generally covered area is revealed, he can't say Kriyat Shema in front of her. But then, don't worry, because towards the end of the line, he just says, Hagaho Maimoni Parakimel, V'nira midivrei harash de tevach bi'isha erva afilu li'isha acharet. But, says the Rama, it seems, according to the Rush, that this tevach bi'isha erva also applies to women he's not married to. And most postgame today, thank God for us, hold that the Rama actually holds like the Rush. He mentions the stricter opinion that if it's not his wife, he can't say Kriyat Shema in front of her if anything is exposed, like not even like this little bit. But the Rush holds that up to a tefach applies to everybody. This is was made very famous, which we discussed several years ago, by Rav Moshe, in saying that a woman can reveal a tefach up to a tefach of her hair, and that's considered okay. And that would be based on this idea of the Rush, that a tefach of even a woman he's not married to would be okay to say Kriyat Shema in front of when she is exposing that amount of skin in that area. So let's just clarify for a moment. The Gemara tells us that a hand's breadth of something is erva. The Shulchan Aruch clarifies that something is an area of her body that is generally covered. The Rama suggests that only applies to his wife, and that women he's not married to can't expose anything. And then he says, no, but the Rush says that it applies to everybody. Which means that for us as women walking in the street amongst men who we're not married to, we would be able to show up to a tefach of things that are generally covered. And this is where the Mishneh Brura comes in. The Mishneh Brura is written by the Chafetz Chaim, so early 20th century. And he explains further what the Shulchan Aruch and the Rama are referring to. And this is really the source that we're going to delve into most tonight. Like I said, I'll say soon also, there are other sources that go well before the Chafetz Chaim that he's basing himself off of. But for today, for, you know, poskening purposes, we'll just see the Mishneh Brura. Source number 13, Lachas Soto, meaning he's commenting on the line in the Shulchan Aruch, "B'makom shadarcha lachasoto," that a tefach is okay to be revealed in a woman in a place that she usually covers. Aval panaha viyadeha, but her hands, her face, and her hands, kefia minhag shadarcha liyot meguleh, right? According to the custom that in general a woman walks around with her face and her hands exposed, be'otomakom, in that place, v'chein bepirso regel ad hashok, and also from the foot, from the cat, from the sole of her foot up until her shok. So again, we said there's a machloket. What is a shok? Is it thigh or calf? He is going to explain to us exactly what that is in the parentheses. V'hu adamakom shenikra ni. The kuf is the silent k, but okay. Bilashon umor ha'olam. So the Mishneh Brura defines shok as the thigh, which starts at the knee, and so her face and her hands, and the area from the sole of her feet up until her knee, meaning below her knee until her knee, those are considered to be things that are, or areas of our body, which are generally uncovered in the place that he lived, okay, in Rodin, but in general, in Western society, that's generally uncovered. But makom shadarchan leilech yachef, in places where they're accustomed to walking bare in these areas of their body, meaning their hands and their face and their calves, mutar likrot kenegdo, he is allowed to say Kriyat Shema even if more than a tefach is revealed of those areas of the body. Shekevan sheragil bahen eno bali de hear her. Because a man is very used to seeing a woman's hands and a woman's face and a woman's calf, it's not going to lead to hear her. It's not going to lead to sensual thoughts. And so it's not a problem to reveal more than a tefach of those areas of the body, according to the Mishneh Brura, because he's used to seeing them anyway. It's not going to arouse any different thoughts. He sees them on the street. What's the difference if he sees them while he's saying Kriyat Shema? Ubimakom shadarchan lechasot, but in a place where the custom is to cover these areas of the body. So, for example, we think today, you know, in Muslim countries where women really do walk around with burqas or in other ways really cover more of their bodies than Western societies do, shiuran tefach, then even in those places, meaning even the hand and the face and the calf, would have to, we'd have to apply the tefach be'isha erva rule, which is that anything more than a tefach revealed is a problem. Why? Because men in those societies aren't used to seeing calves, and therefore the calf might be sensual to them and would lead them to have these thoughts. In fact, we know that Jews living in medieval Muslim societies did, the Rambam talks about women wearing veils. Because that's what the women, that's what the Muslim women did, so that's what the Jewish women had to do, because that was what was customary in society. Kimo sha'ar guf ha'isha, so the idea of tefach would apply even on the calf and the face and the hands, just like it would for the rest of her body in those particular places, if those areas of the body are usually covered. Aval. However, don't get too excited, because, you know, tank tops and short shorts are really common here, so in the summer at least. Aval zro'oteha v'shoka, her arms and her thigh, afilu rigilinli lech migule kederach haprutzot asur. Even if in general society women are accustomed to wearing them bare, kederach haprutzot, which literally means like those who are very immodest. Prutza is the opposite of tsnua, asur. It's still asur. It's still forbidden. Based on this Mishnah Brura, it's explained that he basically seems to be presenting two different kinds of erva. There seems to be, on the one hand, something called subjective erva, depending on the places in which we live. And on the other hand, there's something called objective erva, which is not dependent on the places in which we live. Subjective erva is really just determined by local custom. Look around you. Are people generally uncovering their hands and their faces and their calves and their feet? If so, no problem. Tevach be'ish erva, it doesn't even apply. The whole thing can be exposed. Really not a problem. But in places where they're not exposed, then it is a problem, and then Tevach B'Isha Erva does apply. It really is subjective. It depends on where we live. It depends on the local customs. However, with objective Erva, which are areas of the body which the Chafetz Chaim seems to think are inherently sexual or inherently sensual, are inherently attracting, are inherently something that a man would notice whether or not he's used to seeing them all the time, whether, you know, regardless of local custom, they are considered to be inherently sensual, then those areas of the body would be considered erva anywhere. So that would be, as he explains, the zroa, our arms and our thighs. Those are the extensions of the torso. It's so obvious to the Mishnah Berurah and to all the poskim that the torso is covered, they don't even mention it. It's almost like where are the lines drawn, right? It's so obvious that the torso has to be covered. The question is, where do we demarcate the end of the torso? Is it the actual torso? Like, we use torso like it ends at our shoulders and, you know, maybe at our hips. And so the demarcation line, according to the Mishnah Berurah, is zro'ot and shok, meaning everything from, and again, how we define zro'a, huge question. We can do it another time if you're interested. I guess you're assuming it's an elbow, and that's how most poskim paskin. But from the elbows, and there are sources on that. I'm not trying to ignore it. I just don't have the time to do it here. But from the elbows on up to the torso, on down through the knee, as he did actually very explicitly discuss. And so it seems that there are really three areas of the body where we have objective erva. Where we really absolutely cannot... Oh, no, sorry, there's one more thing. Sorry, I apologize. This idea of objective erva, this idea that even though local custom may be that women expose these things, still means that we can't expose them. It's actually based on a Tiferet Shmuel who commented on the Rush in source number 14. And he explains, and he kind of repeats some ideas of the Mishnah Berurah and adds another idea. V'davar sheragil v'hiyot mechuse ba'isha. Again, you know, similar to the language of the Shulchan Aruch, but not exactly. He's quoting the Rush here. But a portion of her body that is she's used to covering or she's accustomed to cover. Perish la'afuke mashadarach nashim v'hiyot megule. Meaning, this is to make an exception for that which she is accustomed to revealing. Kigon hapanim v'hatzavar v'yadayim. So he adds one body part to the Mishnah Berurah, such as the face, the neck, and the hands. Aval niran be'enai. But however, it appears to me, b'makom sherigulot hanashim legalot zro'otehem. Right, in places where women are accustomed to revealing their arms. And they're accustomed to, I think he lived actually when style, like in like the 17th, 18th centuries, when styles were literally at the women's chest and at the women's breast, right? It says in a place where they're, sorry, in, oh, and where the women are accustomed to open, to have open collars is what he means, until really close to her breasts. Zehu min hagra. This is an evil custom. V'korei ani bahem chukim lo tovim, and I call them evil customs or bad customs. V'tefach bi'isha erva, and the concept of tefach bi'isha erva, meaning anything more than a tefach being exposed is a problem, it applies there. Even if local custom is to expose these areas of the body, tefach bi'isha erva still applies because these are, this is considered objective erva, even though everyone else around us may expose them, they're inherently sensual and they're considered erva even if other people don't cover them in that particular place. And so if we take the Mishnah Berurah together based on this, and together with the Tiferet Shmuel upon whom he seems to be based, there are three explicit areas of the body that we must cover. And that is the arms, zrooteha, shoka, her thigh, and her samach ladadeha, her chest, right? Her chazeh, her lev, depending on the language of chazal. And like I said, these areas of the body each really need to be further defined. What exactly is the shok, right? Where is the chazeh? What's the upper limit, right? We know the, like, the lower limit, is, the torso is like so obvious, they don't mention it, but what's the upper limit of the chazeh? And what is the limit of the zroa? What, you know, is it to the elbow? Is it to the wrist? Is it to the knee? Is it to the ankle? All these questions are really good questions. I decided to, instead of focusing on those, you know, sources from the beginning, which is, like I said, a share in and of itself, I wanted to discuss the question of pants, because I think that that's also a very important question. That being said, if there's enough interest, and please feel free to come over to me and let me know, I'll try to get a sense. I'm happy to give a third shir to go through the sources for the zroa and the shok and the chazeh to go into that further. The question that remains, if we know now that, you know, the areas of the body that have to be covered are the shok and the zroa and the chazeh, what about pants? Because pants cover the legs, right? There's no skin that's being shown when someone's wearing pants. What, you know, is there an issue with pants? If so, what is the issue and why is it an issue? And so that's what I would like to deal with for the rest of this year. There are basically two potential issues with pants. One of them, the first one we'll see, may not be as relevant anymore, depending on who you ask, and the second one is as relevant as ever. So just to give you a little bit of history, I actually looked online and I found very interesting, a Time magazine article written in 2016 that was subtitled, A History of Women Wearing Pants. And, you know, as I'm sure many of you are aware, it used to be that only men wore pants, and women only wore dresses and skirts. It was unheard of for a woman to wear pants, unless, like, think Mulan, right? Like, they wanted to disguise themselves as a man, so of course they had to wear pants. But if a woman was dressing as herself, she couldn't wear pants. There were no pants made for her. It wasn't really an option. In fact, it really only started in about the 1960s, around the time of the feminist revolution, that pants really came onto the scene. Yes, there was a 1930s cover of Vogue where a woman was wearing pants, like for the first time ever on the cover of a fashion magazine. But even then, they were made for women, kind of, but they weren't really made for women on a wholesale fashion. It wasn't viewed as something, it was viewed as something avant-garde. It wasn't viewed as something mainstream. Women just really did not wear pants. They just wore skirts. And in fact, they said that the only times you really saw women wearing pants before the 1960s were when they were trying to disguise themselves as men, like I said, like Mulan, or when they were working men's jobs. Like, for example, in World War II, when all the men were at the front and the women had to take over the men's jobs. And even so, they only wore pants if they were not interacting with the public. If they were inside the factories, then they could wear the pants because they were moving and they were doing the things that men did, and they needed the pants for, I guess, practical purposes. But if they were doing things like, I don't know, with the government and taking, you know, people around or introducing the company to people, they were wearing skirts because they were women. So it's just interesting to see how times have really changed. But because of this past, and because of the fact that pants were really men's clothing, and women's clothing was really limited to skirts and dresses, pants became known as beged ish. They were something that were designated for men, they were worn only by men, and so they were considered to be the clothing of men. And we're told in Devarim, Perek Chaf Bet Pasuk Hei, in source number 15, Lo yiyeh kli gever al isha, that a woman cannot wear the vessels or the clothing or the, really, anything of a man. The same thing, by the way, for men. Lo yulbash gever sima isha. A man also can't wear the vestments of a woman. Ki tovat Hashem alokecha kol asayela, because anyone who basically wears the clothing or or does things that are similar to the other gender is considered an abomination to Hashem. And Rashi explains the reasoning in source number 16, Shetehei Domeh Le'ish, right after the Dimura Matzil over there in the first line. Why would a woman want to wear pants? Shetehei Domeh Le'ish, she would only do it to disguise herself, because in his time, no one else would do it. Kedei Shetelech Bein Ha'anashim, this is a woman who's basically a prutza. She wants to disguise herself as a man so that she can hang out with the men. She'ein zo ela l'shem niyof, and this has, you know, an adulterous connotation. She's doing it in order to grab the man's attention or to be able to get to the men in a way that was easier than being dressed as a woman. And so there are some modern-day poskim who feel that because of this, pants are a part of the Isser of Beged Ish. We're not going to read it inside, but if you want to, you can read it for yourself in source number 17, the Mincha Yitzhak, which was written by Rav Yitzhak Yaakov Weiss, who lived in 20th century, Poland and Hungary, and then ultimately England and Israel. And he believes that because pants were always man's clothing, they are still considered Beged Ish, even if they're today considered to be, you know, women do wear them today, it doesn't matter. They were once for men, and they will always be for men. And this actually has a really important nafkamina, because if something's Beged Ish, that means that we can never wear it, ever. Like, not even to bed, not even at home. It means that we would not be able to wear pajama pants. So it really has some, you know, very serious ramifications here to consider pants to be Beged Ish. I guess thankfully for me, because I like to wear pajama pants, the Rav Avadya Yosef disagrees. In source number 18, in the Abiya Omer, we're going to read the first paragraph only now. He says, Me'ata havo navo le'inyan banot halov shot michnasayim aruchot. Now we're going to get to the issue of women wearing pants, long pants, meaning we're not talking about shorts, we're talking about pants. Im in bazem ishum isur lo yekli gever al isha, does this fall under the category of beged ish? Is it a problem? Yesh lomar she'en benidon didan. There's a way to say that in our case, mishum, that it's not so in our case. Mishum lo yiyeh kli gever al isha, that our case does not fall under the rubric of beged ish. Mikevan sheyesh hevdel nikar bein mechnesei gvarim lemechnesei nashim. Because when he was writing this, I think it was like the 1980s, women's pants were fashionable. So women's pants were being fashioned, and they were very, very different than men's pants. Not as many pockets, right? I think that's like one of the major complaints, but just very, very different in terms of, and he's going to explain. Right? You see hot pink pants that men will never wear, right? They're created in colors that men would never wear on their bodies, or at least back then. But they're also styled in a different style. They have a different form. They have a different shape, right? Men's bodies and women's bodies are different. Men and women wear different pants. Again, before like the tight pants fashion and fad, but still, even so, men's pants are different than women's pants in terms of color so far, and in terms of style, in terms of cut. V'hu hadin kan la'achar shenit pashit hadavar bezman hazeh b'levishat mechnasayim l'nashim b'harbe mikomot. And because today so many women are wearing pants, we can't really say anymore that it's Beged Ish, because so many women today are wearing pants. They're made to fit with a different cut, with different colors. We can't really say that they're men's clothing anymore. They really have become women's clothing. They're no longer made specifically for men. Because there's such a big difference between men's and women's pants, this is very clear. It's no longer considered to be a problem of Beged Ish. Okay, so now we know that it's not a problem of Beged Ish, according to Rav Avadya Yosef, and most modern-day poskim agree with Rav Avadya Yosef. Not all, but most. So then why is it considered to be an issue of tzniut or a lack of tzniut to wear pants? And this is a totally separate issue that we come across in a very interesting way. If you turn to source number 19, the Gemara in Psachim tells us, it seems totally irrelevant, but it will be relevant, I promise. Tanya Debe Rabbi Yishmael, we learn in the name of Rabbi Yishmael, or it was taught in the house, thank you. It was taught in the house of Rabbi Yishmael. La'olam yisaper adam belashon nikiya, a man should always speak with clean language. Why? Well, what's his proof? Shehare bazav krao merkav ubiisha krao moshav. Okay, so just some background. A zav is a man who has become tame through some sort of secretion that is not tahor. Azov is generally like a, you know, secreted fluid from, you know, ejaculate or something like that. He's considered tummy. That's called Azov. There's also a Zava. Okay, so you might have heard about a Nida. A Zava is something similar, right? A woman, when she has something tummy coming out of her, it's usually blood. What's the difference between a Nida and Zava? It doesn't matter today, so you don't have to worry. But back in the day, there were differences of opinion. Let's just say, I think the easiest one is the Rambam, when she bleeds as part of her cycle. She was considered a Nida Midoraita when she bled like in between cycles, mid-cycle staining, things like that. Then she was considered to be a Zava. We've collapsed the distinction. It was too hard for the women to distinguish. We collapsed the distinction, and we just pretend that we're both today, and it's all good. But back then, there was a Zav and a Zava, okay? A man and a woman who are impure. And the Pesukim then go on to tell us, well, depending on what they touch, because we know that Tumah spreads. When you touch something in your tummy, then the thing that you touch becomes tummy. So when describing, when giving examples of things that each the Zav and the Zava each touch that become tame, with the man, it talks about Merkav. When he rides a horse, then the saddle becomes tame. But for a woman, they don't give the example of riding a horse. They give the example of Moshav. When she's sitting down, then the chair becomes tame. Why do they give different examples, right? Both men and women rode horses. Both men and women sat down on chairs. Why do they give a different example for each? So here Rashi comes in and explains it to us in source number 20. Bazav, okay, he just gives the psukim here. Ktiv, v'chol merkava sheyirkav, ubi isha ktiv, o'al al-kli asher hi yoshevet, right? Give different examples for each one. The saddle on which he rides, or the vessel upon which he sits. Lifi, why do we differ for the man and the woman? Lifi she'ein hagun, lahaskir rechiva, upisuk raglayim bi'isha. Because it's not appropriate to mention riding or the split between the legs, the split of the legs, right? Because when a person rides a horse, their legs are split. It's not appropriate to mention that when it comes to a woman. Rashi doesn't really explain why it's not appropriate when it comes to a woman. What's generally understood is that that's the position in which she's in when she's engaging in sexual relations. And so the position of a woman, like kind of spreading her legs, is not an appropriate image to project. So we don't want to project that image. We don't want to talk about that because the split between her legs kind of is associated with sexuality and with the sexual relationship, and so it's considered to be an inappropriate, I guess, image. And because this idea of pisuk raglayim, of splitting her legs, lacks tsniut, pants are considered to be lacking in tsniut because they reveal that exact pisuk raglayim, they reveal that exact split between her legs, the split between her thighs. We see this very explicitly in a tshuva in source number 21 called Yaskil Avdi, written by a rabbi named Rav Avadya Hadaya, who lived in the last century in Israel. And he says, V'ula mitam achar yesh la'asor minidon didan. And he also discusses how pants are not a problem of beged ish, but there's another reason why they're a problem. Mishum de levush ze shal mechnasayim le'isha hu levush parua uparutz. Because this clothing of the, when women are wearing pants, is considered to be clothing that is parua, which is uncovered, uparutz, immodest. Ve'eno malbush shel tznuim. It's not considered to be clothing of those who are modest, or, you know, hiding the things that they should hide. Mikevan sharaglayim chalukim echad mehashenit ad beit harechem. Because the pants show the split from one leg to the next until the area of the vagina, to be explicit, it really goes all the way up to the crotch. And because it shows the split between the legs all the way up to the crotch, that really is not an appropriate image to be projecting as a woman. Vizeme vili de hirhor lehamistakelba, because it can lead a man to really think sexual thoughts when she's basically revealing that area of her body. Ume vi gam li deniof, and leads to, you know, adultery and everything like that, that he talks about how it's a terrible thing. Rav Avadya Yosef agrees. And going back up, you don't have to flip pages, but back up to source number 18, which continued on the top of this page. So you don't see 18, but it's the paragraphs that are at the top of the page. Let's go to the second paragraph now. And he explains, even though it's not beged ish, I still don't think pants are okay. Ki big day shachatein, because they're considered clothing of haughtiness. And they arouse a special attention to those who see them. Yoter me'asher simla ochasait rigila, more than a dress or a skirt would. Well, maybe only they hear hurim ra'im, and it leads to bad thoughts. The in levanot hakisheirot lalecha bahen klal, and so women of Jewish women who are, you know, acting in the appropriate manner should not wear them at all. Ubefra b'michnasayim hamehudakot mamash al aguf, And here he differentiates a little bit. And he says all pants are not good, but he says it, especially with tight pants, with pants that literally stick to the body, shegormot his taklut v'hirhurim ra'im b'yeter se'i, that cause even greater hirhur, that cause even greater sensual thoughts, because again, her form is very, very clearly seen, and the pisak raglayim, which he doesn't mention explicitly here, but he's really talking about the form of the body more than the pisak raglayim, although the pisak raglayim is pretty clearly a problem also, but he's talking about the form of the body is very, very clearly delineated in tight pants. He does mention something interesting, because the reason why the Rav Avadja Yosef is even talking about pants here is because he was asked a shayla by someone who said, the girls in my school wear miniskirts, and they refuse to wear longer skirts, and we've tried and tried and tried and tried, and they will not wear longer skirts. Again, this was like back in the 80s when miniskirts were really in style, and the girls, and it's an Israeli school, they would not do it. And the question was, would it be better to have them wear loose-fitting pants than to wear miniskirts? It's a good question. Right, they're obviously both, based on what we've spoken about today, they're both not considered to be tsnuim. The question is it better to have one over the other? If they would not wear a tsanua skirt, what should they do? So listen to how he continues. Umi kol makom, however, in ein habanot shomot lekol horim umorim, if the girls don't listen to their parents or their teachers, lihimanam levishat chatzaiyot k'tzarot biyoter, and prevent themselves from wearing miniskirts, v'hochot bashuk v'yerach migulot, and they're walking outside in the market and their thighs are exposed, shehi pritzot yetera, that's really immodest, yesh livchor hara b'miuto, we should choose the lesser of the two evils, u'lehorot lehen k'hora'at sha'ah l'vosh mechnasayim. And as a hora'at sha'ah, just to define hora'at sha'ah, that is a temporary psak halacha, a temporary ruling based on an emergency situation. As a temporary ruling based on an emergency situation, because they would not wear anything but miniskirts, it would be better for them to wear pants, because at least their legs would be covered. At least their thighs wouldn't be exposed, whereas with the miniskirts, they would be exposed.
Would that include tights?
Meaning tights all the way, like leggings? Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Oh, no, meaning would that include leggings? Meaning, would leggings be better? Very good question. So Rav Ellenson, he doesn't address that. The truth is, if it was in the 1980s, he should have been exposed to leggings. He doesn't address it, but Rav Ellenson does. Very good question. If you turn to source number 22 in Atznei Lechet, Rav Ellenson actually goes back to the idea of Tefach B'Isha Erva. Well, anything that's exposed up to a Tefach is okay when it comes to Erva. And he says, we don't usually practice that you know, you can expose up to a tefach of everything always. However, what does he say at the bottom of, it's a footnote here, footnote number 111, and he goes through a lot of background that we've done some of it and others we're not going to do right now. You can read it yourself. That the last long line in the middle, lefi zeh, because of tefach b'isha erva, yesh leha'adif chatzait hamagiyah kim'at liberkayim al mechnasayim. If you're talking not about a miniskirt, Rav Avadja was talking about a miniskirt, but if we're talking about a skirt that like kind of touches the knees, like is a little bit above, that's better than pants. So it's all relative, right? If it's an insistence upon a miniskirt, pants are better. But if it's just a little bit of a shorter skirt, then a skirt is better. Even though it's not necessarily halachic, you know, bound by the halachic requirement, it's still better than the pants. So it's kind of like a gradation of what is better than the other. But in conclusion, let's go back to the last paragraph in source number 18, which is right above source number 19. Rav Avadja Yosef continues, Maskana Didina, in the conclusion in our case of the law, Iser Gamar Livnot Yisr Alalacha Bechatzaiyot Ktzarot Osmalot Ktzarot. It is a real violation for women to walk around in short skirts and short dresses. Hanikraot Mini, that are called Mini. And listen to the play on words. He's really funny here. Laminim v'lamalshinim al tihi tikva. So the word v'lamalshinim is taken out of our Shemona Esrei Girsa, but the old text of Shemona Esrei Bracha v'lamalshinim started v'laminim. Amin in Hebrew really means like a heretic. But he's playing on words that the miniskirts, there shouldn't be any hope for the miniskirts. We say it in Shemona Esrei that there shouldn't be any hope for the heretics. He's saying there shouldn't be any hope for the miniskirts. Okay. V'isr zeh yesh bo gam lav min haTorah, and this is a violation from the Torah also. Shena amar v'chukotein lo telechu, because we're not allowed to follow in the ways of the non-Jews. And this miniskirt fashion trend was something that was not started by Jews. It was started by non-Jews. And at this point, he holds that it's actually an Isser D'oraita to wear a miniskirt based on that. V'chein in lahatir lechachila levno Yisrael levosh mechdasayim, and also lechachila, which means in an ideal world, meaning when it's not that they're insisting on mini skirts as the alternative, women should not wear pants either. Mishum shehin bigdei shachatsu pritzot, because they're considered to be clothing of haughtiness and immodesty, again, because of the form-fitting pisuk raglayim discussion that we had before. Ubanot haloshot chatzayot k'tzarot osmalot k'tzarot lemala min haberach, and for those women who are wearing those short skirts that are above the knee, tzarich lihishtadel lehashpia aleihan b'tarchi noam, we have to try to influence them in a very gentle way, lovosh chatzayot osmalot tznuot, to wear longer, more tznua skirts and dresses, but ofen shem mechasot et haberkayim gam be'eit yishivatan, in a way that covers their knees also when they're sitting. And so it's pretty clear, I thought it was very interesting that Rav Avadja talks about the, there are delineations within the halacha. However, in the ideal world, pants and mini skirts, anything about a skirt above the knee and pants are not considered to be tzanua.
But he also said, which he sort of glossed over, when you're sitting.
Yes.
You have to be covered even when you're
yes,
sitting.
Yes, exactly. Yes, because that's considered to be the demarcation line. And again, that's for another shiur. Now, it should be noted, like someone mentioned, like there is a difference between leggings, for example, and loose pants. There are, so obviously Rav Avadja holds that pants are not okay, unless, of course, the alternative is a miniskirt. There are those posim who will say that loose-fitting pants are different than tight-fitting pants, which I think is pretty obvious as to why, right? Loose-fitting sweatpants are not as form-fitting. You don't see the pisuk raglayim as much, the split between the legs. You don't see the form of the thighs as much. And so there are those who say, lechachila, women shouldn't wear those either. In an ideal way, they shouldn't be, because still when you walk, you still can see the split between the legs. But there are those rebbeim who will allow it in dangerous situations, such as skiing or things like that. So, it's worth a shayla if you ever find yourself in a particular situation. People definitely do that. My sister-in-law goes skiing. My brother, she married the only person in my family who skis. She was really lucky. They're major skiers in her family. And she just found, she wears her ski pants, and she found a coat that is long, to her knees. And that's what she feels comfortable doing. But, different rabbis have different approaches. So far we've discussed two potential reasons why pants are not considered okay. The first reason is that it might be considered beget ish. We've kind of said that's not really applicable today, according to most poskim. The second is the idea that it's not so tzanua, right? Because of the split between the legs and because of the form-fittingness of the pants themselves. But Rav Ellenson in Hatznei Halacha adds a third dimension, which I found fascinating. And this is the dimension that I'd like to end our halachic discussion. If you flip to source number 23. It's a long paragraph, and it's in modern Hebrew, but I think it's beautiful, and I'm going to read it almost to the end, if that's okay with you, because it just adds another dimension that many women haven't heard about, and the reason why I share it is because this was shared with me by Shana Goldberg, who used to teach with me in Mayanot in New Jersey. She now lives in the Gush and teaches in Migdal O, Shimi Aliyah, but while she was teaching in Mayanot, she used to teach Tznias to the seniors, and I still remember that one of the seniors came over to me and said, I really only like this idea. This is the reason why I'm going to stop wearing pants. So I like to share it, because if nothing else speaks to you, maybe this will. Ulam, sorry, you see the bracket. Ulam kayemet v'china acheret latzniut. There's another viewpoint, there's another perspective on the idea of tzniut. Sheyisoda be'etzem hamuskamot hakayemot b'tzibor b'not Yisrael hatzniut, whose foundation is the essence of the conventions that exist in the in like the women who dress tzniusly, like in their society, in their community. Ha'uvda shetzibor ze nizhar lalachet dafka b'chatzait. Right, the fact is that in the tznius community, in the community of women who decide to dress tzniusly, the fact is that they wear skirts. Ma'anika erech mashma'uti lahakpada zot. And that in and of itself, the fact that in the tznius community, in the community of women who choose to dress tzniusly, the fact that they wear skirts, that grants value, a very significant value, to this hakpada, to this strictness, to this idea of wearing only skirts. Al yidei levishat achatzait, why? Because through wearing the skirt, mizdaha bat Yisrael im chugim elu. Because her skirt enables her to identify with that particular group of girls. V'hi mitbadelet mechugim mitiranim, or mityarunim, but I know the shorash, okay? And she, therefore, in that way, separates, so she identifies herself with the group of girls who dress tzniusly, and she separates herself from the permissive girls. בבינדה מסוימת, to some extent, נהפכה החצאית בעשרות השנים, in the last few decades, the skirt has kind of transformed, האחרונים, the skirt has kind of transformed למעין כיפה של הבת השומרת מצוות בקפטנות. It's kind of like a kippah for girls who keep Torah mitzvot. Just like we can recognize a boy from a mile away if he's wearing a kippah, like, oh, that guy's from. So, too, we can recognize a girl from a mile away when she's wearing a skirt. And he says that it's kind of similar. In that way, it's like an identifying factor for girls who or women who decide to identify themselves within this community. The Hamishtadelet Lenahel Et Chayeha identifies herself as one who tries to live her life, to lead her life, Lifi HaNachayot HaMusar Shel Chachaminu, according to the ethical guidelines of our sages. Kifi Shehei Mishtakfot B'Horaoteihem HaChilchatiyot, as those ethical guidelines are reflected in their halachic teachings. Al Yidei Siruvah Lelecha B'Mechnasayim, through her refusal to wear pants out of the house, he matzbiya al atzma beofen hafganati, she indicates about herself in a very demonstrative way, she'ein hi muchenet lehashlim im kol ha-tachtivim shel ofana ha-modernit, that she's not ready to accept all the dictates of modern fashion. V'shehi mistayega me'archei ha-musar ha-nifutzim kayom, and that she disagrees with the widespread ethical value, ethics and values, with ethics and values that are widespread today, bekerav tzibur harachav, in wider society. Lebchina zo yesh chashivut miyuchadet legabei otan habanot hatznuot. From this perspective, there's a very special importance to these women who dress tzniyasli, hanunsaot bechavra rechava, specifically those who find themselves in greater society, umeguvenet and diverse society, b'mizgeret limudehen, right, those who are in, you know, secular colleges, o avodatan hayom yomit, or those who work in general society. This is a way for them to differentiate themselves from those around them. Banot eila v'adayzukukot letuskorot tzmidit, these girls who are in general society really need a constant reminder, she'ein hein mizdachot im ha'arachim v'orchot ha'chayim shel svivatan, that they don't identify with the values and the way of life of those surrounding them. Al b'china zot hitzbiya pa'an biti, on this perspective, my daughter once displayed this perspective, be'amra, when she said, gam im yivakach me'al kosafik she'ein isor b'halicha b'mechnasayim, even if it's proven that there's no violation to wear pants, which we've just proven that there is not, but okay, let's say there is, hayiti mamshicha lehizaher shelo loboshotam, even if it was proven that it's okay to wear pants, I'd still be careful not to wear them. Because with the skirt, she felt that she identified with a certain group of people that she wanted to identify with. And when she was with that group of people, that helped her to differentiate, you know, to identify with them. And when she was not, it helped to remind herself who she identified with. And in fact, we brought in Allison Josephs last November, I think, who is the founder of Jew in the City. You may have heard of her or the website. And she wrote the following in an article about wearing skirts. Quote, I started wearing only skirts as an experiment right before I got to college. She's a Bala Tshuva. I realized after a while that wearing skirts in public, parentheses, I did and still do wear pants in front of other women and family members in private, wearing skirts in public was a good personal reminder about who I was, what I believed in, and what I wanted to represent to the rest of the world. It was actually a non-Jewish dorm neighbor in college, though, that made me realize how nice it was to associate myself with my community in an outward way. It was towards the beginning of my freshman year, and my neighbor shared an interesting story with me and a fellow Orthodox friend. He said that when he first got to campus, he was eager to meet new friends. So in an attempt to find like-minded people, he put on and kept wearing a t-shirt with his favorite band on it. He struck up a conversation with a classmate along the way based on the shirt, but the conversation didn't end up leading anywhere, since he and the classmate didn't have much in common other than the band. And then he said to us, you people with your yarmulkes and skirts, you can find each other so easily and automatically know that you got so much in common. You're so lucky to be part of a community like that. And so I think that all too often we see our halachot, our laws, our menhagim, our customs as restrictive and limiting, and this is what I can't do, and these are things that, you know, I want to do, but I'm not allowed to. And it's just nice to be reminded, especially by someone from the outside looking in, that, you know, we really are fortunate to have them. And so as you recall from, if you were here last week or not, from the beginning of this year or from last week, you know, the true definition of tzniut is hidden. and secret, right? That which is is not supposed to be revealed is hidden. But we discussed that last week really more in depth. And that the idea of being genuinely a tsnua person, a tsnua woman, is recognizing who we are internally, understanding the essence of who we are, what's really important about ourselves, with enough self-esteem to know our self-worth, but with none of that arrogance that makes us want to flaunt it to everyone else, right? Recognizing our internals as so much more important than our externals. And we discussed that the connection between tsniut and clothing is not that tsniut is only about clothing. This is all last week, right? Tsniut is not all about clothing. It's all about how we think about ourselves, how we hold ourselves to others, how we act with other people, how we act with ourselves, how we act in private with Hashem, etc. So the essence of tsniut is not clothing, but clothing can help us attain the goals of tsniut, right? Because it helps us cover all those externals that could be distracting to other people to help them focus on that which is within us, which is so much more valuable than anything else. And that's really what we want people to see, right? We don't want people to notice us for our nails. We don't want people to notice us for the flower on our shirt. We want people to notice us for who we are. And so dressing in a tsnua way enables people to maybe still notice the flower on our shirt, maybe still notice the nail, you know, our nail color, but not think about us only for those things. And so the basis of the halacha that we described today, that we discussed today, is that we really have to cover up our erva, not our entire everything, right? Not our entire bodies, because we don't believe that the essence of tznius is just hiding ourselves behind a big tent, right? We believe that we have to cover that which is distracting, that which is considered erva, that which is considered to be indecent when exposed in public, because it really shouldn't be exposed, right? And we saw that that's defined halachically as basically a woman's torso, her arms, her thighs, up to the torso up to her neck, which we didn't really discuss today exactly, but her arms up to her elbows, her thighs up to her knees, or through her knees, through her elbows, through her neck, or through her collarbone. Because erva can be distracting, and it can lead people to focus on things that aren't as important, we cover up that erva so that we can help them focus on what really is important, on who we are as a person. And just to... you know, which again is the true definition of tsniut, because we want the people to focus on what's hidden inside of us and the things which are internal. And just to recall the quote from the shir last week that a famous designer once said, the most important, or what was it? I want to quote it exactly, which I probably won't be able to do right now, but what's the most important part of a dress is the woman wearing it. And I think that really is the most important aspect of tsniut, that we are able to use our clothing to help others focus on ourselves. Thank you so much for coming.